have an amazing Tuesday.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. There's been another outbreak of tensions on the Korean Peninsula. AP correspondent Norman Hall gives us details.
South Korea says North Korea has test-launched a ballistic missile toward its eastern waters. The country's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the launch was made Tuesday morning, but did not offer further details such as how far the missile flew. A day earlier, North Korea said it had test-fired two cruise missiles from a submarine. The launches came after the U.S. and South Korean militaries began their largest combined field exercises in years on Monday. I'm Norman Hall.
Human rights groups, including Amnesty International, have now called for Nigerian authorities to end the sectarian attacks that left at least 35 people dead in northern areas over the weekend. We get more details from VOA's Timothy Obezu.
In a statement Sunday, the group urged authorities to, quote, immediately and decisively end incessant attacks by gunmen on communities in southern Kaduna. Armed men on Saturday night killed 15 people, most of them women and children. In a separate attack on Saturday, gunmen killed 20 people in northwest Katsina State, according to police. As outgoing President Muhammadu Buhari's eight-year tenure comes to an end, many hope his successor can do something to rein in on the chronic violence and insecurity. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Biden administration is now allowing thousands of Ukrainians who fled their homeland when Russia invaded a year ago to stay in the United States longer. The administration announced the decision Monday. Move provides relief to Ukrainians whose one-year authorization to stay in the U.S. was set to expire soon. This is VOA News. At a Navy base in the state of California, U.S. President Joe Biden hosted the leaders of the U.K. and Australia to announce more progress in their partnership over nuclear-powered submarines. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
With two U.S. nuclear-powered attack submarines as a backdrop at Point Loma in San Diego, President Biden says the U.S. plans to sell similar vessels to Australia.
Enhance the stability of the Indo-Pacific amid rapidly shifting global dynamics.
Part of a partnership announced in 2021, aimed as a counterweight to China's military buildup.
To navigate the challenges of today and tomorrow.
President Biden didn't directly mention China, but this might have been a note of clarification for Beijing.
Not nuclear arms subs, they're nuclear power.
The three leaders confirmed their commitment to freedom and a rules-based international order. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The head of the United Nations has called on scientists to push governments to act on climate before it's too late. Details from AP correspondent Karen Chamas.
Are at the tip of a tipping point.
This was the stark warning from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. His comments came as experts and officials from around the world gathered for a week-long meeting in the Swiss Alpine town of Interlaken. They met to finalize the last of seven reports issued by the UN's panel of top scientists. Addressing the delegates in a video message, the UN chief said the report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change could not come at a more pivotal time and urged the scientists to act.
I count on the IPCC to do what you have always done, point the way to solutions, and show the urgent need to end global heating with cold, hard facts.
I'm Karen Chamas.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's political allies are now pressing hard ahead with their plan to overhaul the judiciary. The coalition advanced a bill Monday, the night, that would protect the long-serving leader from the calls that he be removed from office over corruption charges he faces. The government has pledged to plow ahead with the legal changes despite widespread opposition. Imprisoned Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny learned from his lawyer that a film detailing his poisoning and political activism won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature. His spokeswoman says a 46-year-old politician was attending a hearing via video link from the prison when his attorney broke the news to him about the documentary. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Today is Tuesday, March 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinadofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russia signals readiness to extend grain deal as Ukraine faces challenges in Bakhmut.
What looked like images of destroyed buildings and mercenary assault teams on the ground, which VOA can't independently verify, were also released by the Russian news agency RIA Novosti.
Moldova fires back at what its officials believe are Russian attempts to destabilize the country.
The government of this small country believes that Russia, a year after starting an expansionist war in Ukraine, has a plan to force a violent change in power here.
And most Asian markets fall as the closure of two U.S. banks spark fears in the financial sector. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. A Russian delegation at talks with senior UN officials say Moscow is ready to accept an extension to a grain export deal that has helped bring down global food prices amid the war with Ukraine. But it said it would accept only a 60-day extension as the Kremlin holds out for changes to how the arrangement is working. The United Nations and Turkey brokered a deal between the two warring countries in July that allows Ukraine to ship food and fertilizer from three of its Black Sea ports. The 120-day agreement, which helped take some of the sting out of rising global food prices, was renewed last November. That extension expires on Saturday. From the Vatican, Pope Francis sent a message of solidarity with Ukrainians as Russian attacks in the city of Bakhmut and other regions intensified. VOA's Veronica Baderas-Inglesis looks at the logistics challenges facing Ukrainian forces on the battlefield.
The Russian paramilitary group Wagner announced new gains in the fight for the city of Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine over the weekend. What looked like images of destroyed buildings and mercenary assault teams on the ground, which VOA can't independently verify, were also released by the Russian news agency RIA Novosti. Ukraine's forces are feeling the pressure. A Ukrainian paratrooper, identified only as Mikhail, told the Associated Press.
It's hard to defend the Bakhmut stronghold because a lot of enemy forces are concentrated here. And also, the weather is not allowing us to use vehicles. It's too muddy.
Despite the challenges, the soldiers cannot afford to lose focus, added a commander with the 44th Brigade with the call sign Gray.
We have a lot of work to do, no breaks, any time of the day. We work at night if they call us.
The Russian attacks have taken a heavy toll on civilians, said Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky as he addressed his nation.
Missiles and artillery, drones and mortars. The evil state uses different weapons, but with one goal in mind, to destroy life and leave nothing human.
Civilian injuries and the destruction of homes with missiles and cluster munitions were also reported by the Ukrainian police in the city of Kostyantynivka, west of Bakhmut. In the southern province of Kherson, three people were killed in the shelling. Galina Kolisnik said the attack happened while she was shopping.
Explosions started, our car was damaged, people were hurt, and we were in the store just at that time.
Amid the latest escalation of violence, Pope Francis reiterated a call for peace.
Let's stay united in faith and solidarity with our brothers who are suffering because of the war. And above all, don't forget the martyrized Ukrainian people.
The message of solidarity was heard by thousands of people who had gathered in St. Peter's Square to participate in the Sunday prayers. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Moldova is firing back at what its officials believe are Russian attempts to destabilize the tiny former Soviet republic, which borders Ukraine and has long had leanings towards the West. Moldovan leaders have unleashed a campaign against Russian propaganda that has reopened the debate on the use of the Russian language and of freedom of expression. Jonathan Speer narrates this report from Ricardo Marchina in the Moldovan capital, Chisinau.
Moldovan President Maia Sandu takes on a serious tone as she addresses her nation. The government of this small country believes that Russia, a year after starting an expansionist war in Ukraine, has a plan to force a violent change in power here. The purpose of Russia's actions are to overthrow the constitutional order, she says, change the legitimate government in Chisinau to an illegal one, which would put our country at the service of Russia. Moldovan society is deeply divided between Romanian speakers, historically linked to Romania and Europe, and Russian speakers, who maintain strong ties to Moscow. This de facto 50-50 division is the perfect ground for Russian propaganda to promote the Kremlin's agenda here, much as it happened in Ukraine. The cameras are off at RTR Moldova, a channel based in Chisinau. The Moldovan government has withdrawn its broadcast license, along with five other Russian-language channels. The official justification is that these channels illegally broadcast programming produced in Russia, but the unspoken reason is different. They are accused of being the hand of the Kremlin in Moldova. Employees at the channel criticize that decision and say it leaves a large part of the population without content that is impossible to create in Moldova because of a lack of advertising revenue. Vasily Moisenko is a journalist at the Russian language TV channel RTR in Chisinau. The content from Russia that we broadcast is traditional for many Moldovan viewers. There are many people here who are Russian-speaking, and they really like these programs that are impossible to produce here. The closure of these channels has reopened the debate over freedom of expression during wartime. The authorities responsible for this blackout have been blunt in stating their reasons. Liliana Vitu is president of Audiovisual Council, the body that suspended the license to these channels.
Well, freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom to disinform. We looked at how certain TV stations reported before the war. Prior to the war, we noticed that a group of media stations prepared this attack on Ukraine. It was an informational preparation, justification for the aggression that was to come.
Mikhail Serkeli is one of the best-known political news YouTubers in the country. In his opinion, the now-suspended TV channels are Putin's loudspeakers in Moldova.
Of course, there is you have to choose. There is a freedom of speech from one side, and from another side, there is a security of the country, security of the nation. They are promoting the hatred against Ukraine. They are promoting Russian general line of politics.
Others believe that the suspension of these Russian-speaking channels is an attack against press freedom. That is the view of GRT TV, a channel in the southern region of Gagauzia that broadcasts in Russian, Romanian and Gagauz, the local language that has not been closed. Vadim Anastasov is its director. It is difficult, he says, to state that this is freedom of speech when certain people in power try through their influence to press somehow or dictate something. That is why I think there is no freedom of speech. Moldova has joined countries in Europe in banning Russian propaganda channels, but having such a large Russian-speaking population, the debate in this country goes much deeper. For Ricardo Marchina in Chisinau, Moldova, Jonathan Speer, VOA News.
Thank you, Jonathan. And a new maximum security prison in El Salvador, considered to be the biggest and largest in Latin America, was built under the orders of President Nayib Bukele as part of his crackdown on crime and gangs that has helped reduce violence in the country. But the project has raised human rights concerns, as we hear from Claudia Zaldana.
The country's new maximum security prison. It cost more than $100 million and took over 2 years to complete. It was built to house a major portion of the more than 65,000 alleged gang members detained since the country enacted a state of emergency a year ago to crack down on violent crime. Located near the Salvadoran capital, the massive 160-hectare compound is guarded by a security force numbering more than 800. With the capacity to house 40,000 inmates, the prison is Latin America's largest, something that dismays former Salvadoran congressman turned political analyst Jorge Villacorta.
For me, to have the largest prison in Latin America should not be a source of national pride. On the contrary, it should make us ashamed because it shows the failure of our governments, not just this one.
Human rights advocates have long expressed concern over conditions in the country's prisons. Zaira Navas is a lawyer with the human rights nonprofit Cristosal.
There is an exaggerated overpopulation. This results in conditions of extreme overcrowding and disease. There is a serious situation of violation of human rights. More than 94 people have died inside the prisons.
Each cell will house 100 inmates who will sleep in metal bunks. Romeo Rodriguez, El Salvador's Minister of Public Works, says the goal is to punish criminals.
No yards or recreation areas have been built. We've tried to guarantee that detainees are no longer able to give orders to murder Salvadorans from prison like they used to do before.
The Salvadoran government released images of an early morning operation as armed guards transferred the first 2,000 prisoners. With the hashtag War Against Gangs, President Bukele tweeted, "This will be their new home, where they will live for decades, unable to do any more harm to the population." Some human rights advocates allege the government is only focusing on punishment without a rehabilitation plan for the inmates. As the country has seen a drop in violent crime under the government crackdown, some, like Villacorta, question at what cost.
Now that people don't have the tremendous weight of dangerous gangs over their heads, they feel a sense of calm. We're exchanging tranquility for rights, for democracy.
El Salvador's state of emergency suspended certain constitutional rights and allowed for the launch of a military offensive to combat gang violence. Congress has extended it several times. Claudia Saldaña for VOA News, El Salvador.
In other news, most Asian markets fell today as the closure of two regional U.S. banks sparked fears of contagion in the financial sector. The drop follows the collapse Friday of Silicon Valley Bank after running deposits left it unable to stay afloat. The French news agency AFP says the collapse of a bank which specializes in financing in the tech sector came as it announced a stock offering and sale of security to raise cash. Its shares collapsed by 60% before federal regulators closed it down. Reuters said President Biden and his economic team worked with regulators over the weekend to guarantee deposits in both banks, set up a new facility to give banks access to emergency funds, and worked to make it easier for banks to borrow from the Federal Reserve in emergencies. Analysts say a divided Congress could make it difficult for the president to introduce more stringent banking reforms. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Malawi has diverted flights and suspended schools in its southern district due to Cyclone Freddy, which authorities say has killed at least 40 people, according to the country's disaster management agency. The long-lasting tropical storm, now active for more than a month, previously hit Madagascar and Mozambique and is expected to pass over parts of Zambia and Zimbabwe this week. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Cyclone Freddy hit Malawi on Friday and has so far caused damage in at least 10 districts in the country's south. The government in Lilongwe has suspended schools in southern Malawi until further notice. In Blantyre, authorities suspended flights at the Chileka International Airport for much of Sunday and Monday. Peter Kalaya is a spokesman for Malawi's police service.
Our officers have been deployed to rescue and provide other services to people who need rescuing. And we are almost in each of the districts because we also have police stations in these districts. Suffice to say that our efforts are also being hampered by the effects of the rains themselves because, as I said, the rains are still falling.
Kalaya said the death toll will likely rise as they expect reports from nine other affected districts. Chipiri Lokamula is the spokesman for Malawi's Department of Disaster Preparedness. He told VOA Monday rescue efforts were underway by police, the military, and the Malawi Red Cross.
We've also set a National Emergency Operations Center in Limbi to facilitate coordination of preparedness interventions. Again, we have also stockpiled some relief items at the maintenance staging area in Bangula at our Blantyre warehouse and also some districts for effective and, of course, efficient provision of relief items in most of the areas.
Yob Kachiwanda is the spokesperson for the Malawi's Meteorological Department. He says the cyclone has started to weaken and is expected to leave Malawi soon.
The projections are still there in the next 24 to 48 hours, and we may, of course, go back into the Mozambique Channel as we go towards the midweek into the weekend.
Cyclone Freddy first appeared more than a month ago and is believed to be the longest-lasting storm in the region for the past 20 years. Since February, the cyclone has left scores of people dead across Madagascar and twice hit Mozambique. The storm is expected to hit parts of Zambia and Zimbabwe this week. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The more than two-year-long civil war in Ethiopia has left many children orphaned or separated from their families. The psychological trauma lingers for these children. Mulageta Achiba visited children at a school-torn shelter in this story, narrated by Salem Solomon.
Children in kindergarten in Mekele, the capital of Ethiopia's Tigray region, are singing a popular children's song about the value of education and how it should be cherished. But the children in Maiweni, a school-turned shelter for many displaced by Ethiopia's civil war, have been deprived of education for over 2 years. Since 2020, when the war began, the camp has welcomed more than 8,600 people, about 5,100 of whom are under the age of 18. Tsega Fitsum is a volunteer teacher. She says since the ceasefire in November, she has been seeing positive changes in her class of 65 students.
Many children were hurt. Some were forced to live parentless, even though they have parents. But if there is peace, they want to go back to school and return to their families. We need to make an effort, especially for the children.
Mekele was a site for government aerial bombardments. Mekele's resident, Gebrez Gaber Hadush, says children are still feeling trauma from the aerial attacks.
During the war, children were psychologically traumatized, especially when there were airstrikes and drone attacks. Even now, children have doubts and feel pressured. They don't think planes are coming in for peaceful purposes. Therefore, if school starts on time, it would be good, but they also need psychological treatment.
It's Adin Gilhadara, a psychiatrist in Mekele's Aider Hospital, says the long-term effects of the war will impact the next generation.
Children are experiencing behavioral changes in every household. Where can they go? What should they do? What is so sad is some of my patients under 18 say they have lost hope. They are thinking about committing suicide. Some ask, what is our hope? School has stopped and we are suffering. They need psychosocial support.
According to a 2022 report by the UN, 1.39 million children in the Tigray region are out of school because of Ethiopia's civil war. Now that there's a peace deal, advocates are pushing to offer mental health services to children as part of their education as they begin to re-enter classrooms. For Mulageta Atsmaha in Mekele, Ethiopia, Salem Solomon, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recently discovered asteroid called 2023 DW is creating quite a buzz on the internet. 2023 DW is described as being 50 meters in diameter and that it takes 271 days to orbit the sun. The asteroid is listed at the number one spot on the European Space Agency's asteroid risk list. ESA's list and one from NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies show it to closely pass and possibly impact Earth at 2145 UTC on February 14th, Valentine's Day 2046. A tweet by NASA's Asteroid Watch says that as of now, there is very little risk of Earth impact and that it should be about 7.5 million kilometers away at the time. An email from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory also suggests that it's being monitored very closely and predictions will be updated once more data is gathered. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
March is Women's History Month, and there's no better time to celebrate the accomplishments of women. tell us about the woman that left positive marks in your life. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news. Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week, for the 5-minute VOA newscast. We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the world. Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This past year, since the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, has highlighted the gross and systematic violations of human rights and international humanitarian law by the Russian Federation as part of its brutal war against Ukraine. Make no mistake, the atrocities are on one side, said former U.S. Ambassador to the Human Rights Council in Geneva, Keith Harper, moderator of a high-level UN side event on gross human rights violations due to Russia's aggression against Ukraine. The United States believes Russian forces have committed crimes against humanity in Ukraine, said U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The evidence is overwhelming.
The Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine and the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine have documented a wide range of atrocities and other abuses committed by Russian forces. Summary executions, arbitrary detentions, torture, rape, and other forms of gender-based violence and sexual violence. And we know women, children, older persons, persons with disabilities, and other marginalized groups are most vulnerable to these attacks.
Credible reports indicate Russian officials have orchestrated the transfer, relocation, re-education, adoption, or fostering of thousands of children. Some of these children have been orphaned during the war, and some were already living in institutions for serious health needs, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
In many cases, parents sent children to what they thought were summer camps for their child's safety, but were then denied contact and reunification with their children. In other cases, parents refused to send their children to Russian camps, and Russia's occupation authorities enrolled them anyway. And let's be clear, this is not some offshoot operation. We have evidence that President Putin and the Kremlin are actively engaged in this effort to deny and suppress Ukraine's identity, their history, and their culture.
And mark my words, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, there will be accountability for Russia's atrocities.
But right now, what the Ukrainian people need most desperately is peace. As President Biden said during his visit to Kyiv, and I quote, President Putin chose this war. Every day the war continues is his choice.
Our message to President Putin is this: end the war, end your campaign of brutality, end the suffering your forces have wrought on Ukraine and on the world. But until that day comes, we must all stand with Ukraine, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, and we must all stand for accountability in the face of unconscionable human rights violations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.